Welcome back to Shattering Myths. My pleasure to welcome back after 2 weeks of Islamic detox. The world's foremost expert on the religion of Islam, IQ al-Rasuli. IQ, I understand that you took a little visit to the country that Muslims want to erase from the face of the earth. You went on vacation to Israel.
It wasn't really a vacation. It was an exploration of what... I didn't want to just listen and read what the news media are telling me.
Uh-huh.
I went there to find out for myself what actually is happening. So I took a taxi in Jerusalem.
Well, you know those Jews, they're occupiers. They're terrorists. They're merciless killers. They're occupying and oppressing all those poor little Palestinians. Why would you go to such a horrible place?
Well, just to find out how horrible they are.
Okay, all right, and all right. So you applied for entry, and do you have to get a visa coming from the UK?
No, no problem at all. Doesn't matter who you are. If you have a British passport,
okay.
You take a. I took a flight and I went.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Okay.
Nobody asked
any
questions. Well, they ask the usual question, why you're coming, what is your intention to do, you know, I can do this.
Yeah, they profile, particularly all Israeli flights are profiled.
They have to be.
Yeah, they have to. Oh, yeah, they because they would be the number one target for suicide bombers. So.
No, I mean, right. They were very polite at the border, you know, when you land.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely polite, and they speak several languages, so I mean, it doesn't matter if you speak Arabic, Chinese, or whatever, there's always somebody there to understand.
Yes, yes, and virtually, I would say probably 90%+ of Israelis speak English.
Most of the people that I talked to spoke English.
Yes.
Only one or two, they spoke German or Russian, but otherwise, almost all of them spoke English, yes.
Yeah. There's a fair number of immigrants from Russia. And so in Russia at the time, they did not teach English in school. So there's a lot of Russians that would have immigrated there that, learned Hebrew but have not learned English.
English.
Okay.
Yeah, almost a million of them, by the way. Almost a million.
Almost a million, yeah. And a million out of 6.5 to 7 million. So that's a significant number.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So you arrived and they were very nice to you at the border.
And the passport control. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And
there was no problem whatsoever. Like anybody, if I go to America or go to Europe, no problem whatsoever.
Okay.
Although they saw that in my passport I was born in Iraq. I mean, they knew that.
Uh huh.
Okay, and it made no difference to them. That's it.
Wow, okay.
So I went to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv.
Now, by the way, if you were going to Iraq and a passport office saw that you were born in Israel, would that be a problem?
I don't think it would happen. They finish him off at the border. You know what I mean?
They would kill you is the answer.
In any Arab or Muslim country, you have a problem.
Yeah, yeah. So the Jews were accepting where the Muslims are the antithesis of accepting. They'd kill you.
Yeah, not only me. I mean, Muslims are the enemies of every human being who is not a Muslim.
That's correct.
I would like Americans and people who are listening to understand this. Muslims are not anti-America. They're not anti-Israel. They're not anti-Jews. They're anti every human being who is not a Muslim.
That's what Sharia teaches them. Yeah, that's not 100% true, because they're also opposed to every Muslim who is of a different viewpoint than their own view of Islam. So if you're a Sunni, you also hate and are at war with and will kill Shias.
Believe
and vice
me,
versa.
A Shia going to Pakistan will have a problem.
Yeah.
A Shia going to Pakistan will have a problem. Very serious problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't.
Okay, so all right. So you go through it. Do you have friends in Israel, or were you there?
No, nobody. No. Okay. I went there just. I booked a flight. I booked a hotel. mm-hmm. put my luggage in the hotel, then took a bus to Jerusalem, and from Jerusalem I decided to take a taxi with an Arab Israeli driver.
Okay.
On purpose.
Okay.
So that I have the, literally the point of view of the oppressed people.
Yes, of course.
But believe it or not, when mm-hmm. I asked him, would you rather stay in Israel or go to the Palestinian territories, he didn't bat an eyelid. He said he wouldn't go to any of the Palestinian territories.
Wow. Yeah, because life is impoverished there. They have no freedom there. Life is cheap there.
Yeah, in 67 years of history of Israel,
mm-hmm.
not a single Arab from Israel defected or decided to go outside of Israel to any Arab country. Did
yeah.
you know that?
Not yeah, that's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Hundreds of thousands came into Israel
right.
other than for marriage and whatsoever, mm-hmm. or for mm-hmm. work, but not one of them left Israel to go to the Palestinian territories because they know they have no future left.
Right. Okay, and where did you find these people? Were they bloodthirsty oppressors or... what is it like?
Yada, if I say this is one of the best countries in the world to have social life, you wouldn't
mm-hmm.
believe it.
Yeah.
The number of foreigners, the number of languages, the type of food, I have never seen so much a variety of food. And the food, excellent quality, excellent mm-hmm. quantity, not cheap, by the way.
No.
It's expensive.
Yes, because everything
it's similar
really
to European
yeah.
value.
Right.
It's not cheap.
Right. Yeah.
But the quality is second to none.
Yeah. Yeah, I found that the service in Israel was extraordinary. The food quality was absolutely extraordinary. And I happen to like the everything associated with Israeli food. So, I mean, I ate almost exclusively the local cuisine, but you can get French, Italian, Japanese, Chinese, but you can get anything you want.
I ate Middle Eastern food, literally, Israeli
yes.
or Arab, but definitely
yeah.
Middle Eastern.
Yes.
Now, what I found is amazing,
mm-hmm.
the construction in Jerusalem, I've never seen anything like it.
By the way, you made sure that you were only eating halal, though, didn't you?
I made sure I ate. Forget about halal.
I get a kick out of halal because Yahweh in the book of Yashaya Isaiah tells us that Satan's actual name is halal.
Is it?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah, twice in Isaiah. The only two places where Satan is given a name, because Satan is Hasatan. It means the adversary in Hebrew. Hasatan is only ascribed a name once. He's ascribed the title of the Lord many times, Baal, but he's only given a name once in one book, and it's twice in the book of Isaiah. And his name is Halal.
Halal.
Yes.
I wish the Arabs would know that.
Oh, I've had a ball with that because, you know, they consider halal to be good and that's what they should consume. It is Satan's name.
Well, it's very appropriate, I must say. Very appropriate.
Yes, yeah, it is. Okay, so social life was spectacular. You know, Israelis love to party. That's one of the things I noticed about them.
Absolutely.
And you know, by the way, the whole Torah is based upon partying. The seven invitations to meet with God every year, they're called the Mikre. Mikre means it's based on Kara, the very word that was used, corrupted, to create Quran. And Kara is an invitation to meet. And these are seven chag, which are festival feasts. And so Yahweh's idea of how to spend time with the chosen people is to celebrate and to party. And what you found is that the Jews are partiers.
Absolutely. And the most amazing thing in Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
and then in Tel Aviv when I went,
mm-hmm.
Arab Palestinians, so-called Palestinians, but they're mm-hmm. Arab Israelis.
Right.
But they're all over the place. They are in the malls.
Mm-hmm.
They wear the hijab. They wear the Allah, necklaces and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody even pays attention. What I'm getting at is they're part and parcel of the life of Israel.
Right. Yeah.
Nobody,
yeah,
nobody right. pays any attention.
Right. Yeah, in fact, it's amazing that when rather than taking the land away from the mythical people known as Palestinians today, when the Israelites returned to Israel in 1948, their first thing that they did was offer an olive branch, and they told all of the Arab Muslims living there that if you wish to stay, we want you to stay. We want you to be part of our country. We will make you full citizens. It's the only country in the world, certainly in the world of the Middle East, that gives people of a religion other than the majority equal status.
Absolutely. No, I really, this is stunning. Mm-hmm. I went to see the Kotel, which is the Wailing Wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to the Holy Sepulchre. And then I went also to the Dome of the Rock.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the Holy Sepulchre, and it was absolutely no problem. There were Christians from every single denomination you can possibly imagine, as well as non-Christians. They were checking, they want to visit, they want to see. Like myself. They went to the Kotel, absolutely no interruptions and no problem.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the Dome of the Rock, always a problem. Always a problem. Why are you here? Hey, don't ask me questions. Nothing to do with you. I'm entitled to come. The security allows me to come. Your security allows me to come. Don't ask me questions.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted to know. I said, no, you don't have to know anything. I'm here visiting. All I want to see is to see what the Dome of the Rock is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started telling me that was where Muhammad flew from to the 77.
Yeah,
you
with
and
the,
I
yeah.
know exactly yeah. what that is. Yes.
Yeah, yes, of course. It's the Dome of the Hoofy Print. And the first stop along the way was hell, according to Muhammad. That's where he saw the women hanging by their breasts because they didn't respect all of the good things that their husbands had given them.
Absolutely, yeah. So really, I find the even in the market of the Muslims, you know, the Arab,
mm-hmm.
the small alleyways and everything, the Israelis transformed it because they showed me pictures before Israel went in, and now mm-hmm. it is
right.
spotless. It's clean.
Yes.
They
yes.
have covers. They put air conditioning. Well, not air conditioning. Mm-hmm. The fans and everything. All the shops are beautifully done.
Mm-hmm. But go ahead.
It was not very, very safe. I didn't feel comfortable. I'll continue after the break.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it. We're getting a travel log of Israel from the world's foremost expert on the religion of Islam. What a unique perspective. We'll be back after the commercial break. Provide us with a very interesting eyewitness account of his voyage through Israel. So, IQ, you were in Tel Aviv, and one of the things you noticed is that Muslims, even in religious gear, treated just like everyone else.
I mean, what is that treatment? They were part and parcel of the society.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no discrimination wow. whatsoever. And funnily enough,
by the way, if you're a member of the Christianity in Iraq today,
yeah,
are you discriminated against?
I don't think they exist anymore. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, they don't exist anymore. And their daughters were hauled off as sex slaves, weren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. No.
Yeah, how about Zoroastrians in Iraq? Same thing, right?
Same thing, exactly the same thing.
Fathers yeah. murdered, women yeah. raped, yeah. children enslaved.
Yeah.
So that's the comparison here.
When I asked the Palestinian driver, or so-called the Arab driver,
right.
what do you feel? I mean, because he knew, I told him I came from Iraq. I told him I speak Arabic. Mm-hmm. I spoke to him in Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
And, which made him feel much more relaxed, obviously. And I asked mm-hmm. him, what do you feel? He said, look, we live here, it's excellent, it's society, but we are not free. I said, but you are not free if you go to the Palestinian territory. Funnily enough, he said, it's my people. Well, he doesn't have a people, really. The Palestinians are
he doesn't have people, right.
He doesn't have a people.
Yeah, right.
And yet, no matter what Israel does for them, they still don't feel loyal, and they will never be loyal.
Right. Right.
Ironically, never. I met Christians. You know, you go to a pub in there, and you can socialize. Especially if you're a foreigner visiting,
yeah.
you start yeah. a chat, and they will find out that you just mm-hmm. came to visit. They will open up. And many of the young Christians in Israel have started to say that we are not Arabs. We are Christian Israelis, which is a remarkable phenomenon.
Yeah, you know what? If that's really hard for them because Christianity is so anti-Israel and anti-Jew. But think just for a moment. You know that in 1948, you know what percentage of Israel was Christian?
No.
A little over 20%. You know what percentage is Christian today?
Not Israel, you mean Palestinian.
No, I'm just talking about what percentage of Israeli citizens were, or what percentage of the place that we now call Israel, what percentage of the population was Christian in 1948? The answer is 20%. What percentage of the population is Christian today?
I don't know.
Between 1% and 2%.
Israeli? You mean they have reduced them? Why?
Same reason, because a huge percentage of them were Arab. They were living in the Palestinian-controlled territories, and they were harassed and driven away.
That's what I meant. The ones in the Palestinian territories, they don't exist anymore.
Yeah, they don't exist anymore.
Bethlehem, when Israel controlled Bethlehem after 1967, 85% of the population was Christian. Today, it's 10%.
That's right. I've been there, and it's almost exclusively Islamic. Bethlehem is a hellhole. It is one of the most dangerous, depressing places on earth.
Correct. No, I mean, it was an eye-opener, because what we read in the news, what they show us in the news, they show you only the bad things. They never show you the good things. Jerusalem is on hills. It's built on hills. And what they have built is amazing. The roads are amazing. Yeah. The tunnels.
You know, those hills are Mount Moriah, which means to revere Yah, the Mount of Olives, which is a metaphor for the part spirit, and Zion. Zion means signpost along the way in Hebrew.
Right. Okay.
All right. Yeah, so to be a Zionist, for example, is to be in favor of the signs that Yahweh placed on the way home.
Okay.
That's what Zion means. Yeah. Okay, so it's a beautiful city set on hills, right? And a huge percentage of the city is actually decked out in limestone, so it kind of glistens and it's white.
Correct. Everything is made of the same stone. It's really, really remarkable. They have
It's pretty, that limestone. It's gorgeous.
Israel plants more trees than any nation on the planet.
Right.
They literally...
And they have to, because the Romans salted the land. When the Romans pulled out, they salted the place. So, you know, so much died there that it's only because the Israelis have replanted the place that it thrived today. Wow. And you did you go to the Dome of the Scroll?
No, I didn't.
Did you see the great Isaiah scroll or any of the Dead Sea finds?
Unfortunately, I didn't have time. I just wanted to see more of the people, the oppressed people. That's what I wanted to look for.
You didn't find any. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Q, do you know that something that's, I think, very uncommonly known, particularly in the world of Islam, that the vast preponderance of Jews are not religious? It's about 80 to 85% of Jews are agnostics.
I wouldn't be surprised. Same thing with Christians.
Well, it's probably true that even those who would associate with the religion of Christianity.
Yeah, because many of the churches in Europe are empty.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
Yeah, for good reason.
They're empty.
Yeah, for good reason.
By the way,
they're really corrupt institutions. Yes.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely the most astounding gardens I've ever seen in my life. And they're treated with incredible respect. And yet the Baha'is who are Muslim are treated with contempt and murdered in every Muslim country.
Wow.
Amazing, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's an amazing place, an amazing people. And what's, of course, is amazing here, too, is that the productivity of Israel without any resources exceeds every Islamic country.
In fact, it exceeds the combined Islam. All 1,500 million Muslims, 57 Muslim majority states, cannot outproduce Israel. All of them.
No.
Intellectually,
no.
Militarily,
no.
No, not militarily. Intellectually, no. Definitely not. Scientifically, definitely not. Culturally, definitely not. They have incredible.
Well, in terms of just products, products that are manufactured products. They all of them combined don't equal Israel in manufactured.
Absolutely. No, no. I mean, the social life, they have an incredible number of philharmonic orchestra. They have concerts. I went all the way to the Golan Heights. And they have transformed the Golan into an agricultural place. Amazing, amazing. Vineyards. Vineyards. They have vineyards producing excellent quality wine, by the way.
You know what the Golan was before 1974? What was the Golan used for,
Before 1974? Why? Before 1967? It was used to destroy Israel.
It was used to lob artillery shells down and get into Galilee.
That's exactly
so
what
it was every day from the Golan. It was to lob artillery shells. It was in the Yom Kippur War that Israel was out tanked about 30 or 40 to 1 with vastly inferior equipment, and of course the Syrians had attacked them by surprise. And outgunning them, 30 or 40 to 1, outmanning them 100 to 1, and with the element of surprise, and with vastly superior Russian equipment, the Israelis won the most one-sided tank war in human history.
Yes.
Yeah, the Battle of the Golan in the Yom Kippur War is the single most lopsided victory of a underdog against an outmatched, an overmatched superior. And, we always think of what happened with the Spartans holding off the Persians and Gallipoli and the 300, but the Spartans lost. Here, the odds were the same, even worse in on the side of the Israelis, and yet they won.
They told me there was one guy, I think his name was Cohen. On one tank, he was able to stop 150 tanks. On one tank. He had one platoon.
On one tank.
He stopped 150 tanks from Syria. Literally, he saved the Golan. He saved the Golan, this guy.
Right.
He didn't want...
It's just amazing.
He refused to retreat. That's the whole point. He refused to retreat. He stood his grounds, and he kept on and on and on until all the ammunition was finished. But he stopped the progress of the Syrians completely.
And the difficulty was that, of course, the battles began at night, and the Russian tanks that the Syrians were using had night vision, and the Israeli tanks did not. And on top of that, the Israeli tanks had grossly inferior firepower, grossly inferior armaments, and yet they prevailed. Now, if you were to compare that against the Shiite militias and the Shiite army of Iraq against the Islamic State, where now the Islamic State is one of the best armed nations, or whatever you want to call them, in the world today because of the confiscated military hardware that was left by the retreating Shiites. Rather than standing and holding their ground, the Shiites just all turned tail and ran, didn't they?
The Prime Minister of Iraq, this last one, he said in Mosul alone, 2,300 American Humvees were captured by ISIS. 2,300, each one of them is maybe $500,000.
Right.
Each one of these.
Oh, plus tanks, artillery, what they captured in Mosul is small compared to what they just captured in the Anbar province.
Yeah. It's an unbelievable situation. It really is. Unbelievable.
Yeah. In fact, I should tell you, because I want to just get your comment on this, because James Clapper, who I think is the most disgusting man on the planet today, he is National Security Advisor for the United States. He came out and said that the Islamic State now has deteriorated in terms of the numbers of fighters. And by the way, he said in beginning this year there were 20,000 of them, And now there are 30,000 of them, and yet he said that they have suffered attrition. And that our war against them is prevailing because we've killed 10,000 of them. Now, the math doesn't work. But remember when I told you that when America declared war on the Islamic State, that they would grow in size and capability and territory and in prestige?
And that's what happened.
What's happened?
That's exactly what happened.
Right.
The leadership in America, the leadership in Europe, they are completely out of touch with reality. They are not willing. They are literally not willing to face facts. And yet, the Americans keep saying that they are winning. And yet, ISIS has more territory today in Iraq and Syria and claiming more territory in Libya than ever before. And we are talking about countries the size of the whole of Western Europe. Libya is gigantic. Libya is gigantic. Iraq and Syria together are enormous. It's not small countries. And yet, the Obama administration keeps telling the world, we are winning. How is he winning, shooting? Another report I received only a few days ago from, you know, from America. 85% of sorties by American aircraft return without shooting anybody. Because they are not, they are told, if you have civilians around, don't do anything. Well, you can't. Because ISIS goes among the civilians.
Well, last time I checked, the Islamic State was comprised entirely of civilians.
Thank you. But I didn't want to say that. You said it.
Yeah, that's true. The Islamic State is comprised entirely of civilians. 100% of those America fought and killed in its invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq were civilians. We didn't shoot anybody in uniform.
But you heard that Tariq
Aziz
died. You heard that Tariq Aziz died?
Yes.
Tariq Aziz, the foreign minister of Iraq, the only Christian in the government.
There
was a token Christian in the government of Saddam Hussein.
Right.
He died.
Oh, yeah, and he was one of the most wanted Americans. But what's interesting is that he went from Saddam Hussein to being a non-vital entity to actually working on behalf of and joining the Islamic State. Because what did the Islamic State do? It appealed to the Sunnis because the Shia in Iraq and the Shias from Iran were mass murdering them.
Correct.
And so when America armed and empowered the Shias in Iraq, they created this civil war by declaring war on Iraqi Sunnis.
That's what happened. This is remarkable. Al-Maliki, and instead of putting the Shia and Sunni of Iraq together, America helped him murder the Sunnis.
Correct. And so to defend themselves, the Islamic State emerged as a defensive consequence to the Shia annihilation of Sunnis with American money and equipment. And now the equipment that America gave the Shias to murder Sunnis is in the hands of the Sunnis and being used against the Shia. And America now thinks that we're winning and that... Yeah, and that you know what's being talked about in America is now putting boots on the ground, not to nation build, because they realize you can't nation build in Iraq anymore, but to defeat the Islamic State.
Well,
and do you know that we gave 2,000 anti-tank missiles to the Shia militias this week?
Honestly.
So you're going to put Americans and armored personnel carriers... And you've just given the Shia that were the Shia militias were the most deadly against Americans when we were last there, and you've just given them 2,000 anti-tank missiles.
Okay. Tell me, are you and I the only insane people on the planet, or are they the insane people on the planet?
I'm pretty sure that you and I are among the few who are sane.
Yeah, that's what I think.
I will tell you that there is no sane individual that is currently employed by the U.S. government or the U.S. military.
Not one, I swear. Not one.
Not one. Not one.
No.
There's not a single moral, rational individual.
No.
Not one.
None. None. Even David Petraeus, whom I admired for a while, I thought he was doing something good. turned out.
Petraeus is
stupid, stupid.
Well, Petraeus is the guy, and I never admired Petraeus. I call him Petraeus as opposed with the P, because when he came up with the Awakening Program, which was to arm Sunni Muslims to go after Al-Qaeda, when I knew that Al-Qaeda didn't exist in Iraq, and if they did, they would be Sunni against Sunni, and that's not going to happen. What I said at the time, that his Awakening Program would simply create a civil war where both sides were now heavily armed. And the Awakening Program has become the Islamic State.
Yes.
You could not have done anything more counterproductive than what Petraeus did during the Bush administration. And he's still heralded by Republicans in Congress as the great victor and hero. When the day that he announced that program, I went ballistic. And I said, this is going to be the consequence. Turned out exactly that way.
Isn't that remarkable? You can tell. You can... prophesy the future.
Predict the future.
Predict. Yes. Yes, well, Muhammad said he prophesied. He predicted nothing. He prophesied nothing.
Right. Now, I'm not claiming to be a prophet. I was able to use evidence and reason to foretell what the consequence was going to be of that ridiculous to the United States. And I was right. Within a year of the time of 9/11, I came to a very controversial conclusion that Al-Qaeda was irrelevant and that they would cease to exist and that it wouldn't matter. And within a month of the time that I learned about the Islamic State, I came to the conclusion that they matter and that they will continue to exist and there will be no way to stop them. What do you think about those two statements and the and what they predicted?
Well, Yada, the prophets of Israel never said that they received their prophecies from God. They could read the situation. They contemplated, they thought about it, and they came to the correct conclusions. So do you.
That part's really not true. Almost every one of the prophets, Yahweh speaks through them in first person. So almost all the prophecies are offered in first person. So whoever told you that was misled you there. Every one of the prophets, Yahweh speaks through them in first person. So they're not coming to the conclusions on their own. There's almost no conclusion that is offered by a prophet.
So how did
but
they?
But anyway,
they predicted
that. They didn't actually predict anything. Yahweh doesn't predict. Yahweh is as spirit is equates himself to light. On as light, the past, present, and future exist simultaneously. If you were like light, if you were a spiritual being, you can witness the future at any time. And so Yahweh, as a spiritual being, is capable of seeing our future and reporting in our past what he has witnessed. So what he is providing through his prophets is what I would call future history. He's telling us what our decisions have led to. So he's not predicting anything. He's reporting the future in our past.
I think I have to read the prophets.
We should probably chat a bit because I can guide you through them, particularly in Hebrew, with the tools that I think would really help in that regard. It's an extraordinary journey, and the purpose of the prophets is really singular. It wasn't to predict the future, because Yahweh never predicts the future. He simply reports on what the future will entail. The purpose of the prophets, and Yahweh says this over and over again, he says, if you want to know whether or not I inspired these words, if you want to know if what somebody is saying comes from me or not, the one thing you should always look for is prophecy, is future history.
Correct.
If it does not exist, then these statements did not come from me. And if the statement is erroneous in any way, if one out of 1,000 predictions doesn't come true exactly as predicted, then the statement is not for me. He says, the thing that you can use, the one thing I can do for you to prove that I exist and that I inspired this testimony, is I can provide 100% accurate testimony about what's going to occur in the future. And that way, I'm not imposing myself on you, but if you're intellectual, if you're curious, if you have an open mind and you're rational, you'll come to know me.
Unbelievable. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I have to apologize.
Yeah. No, don't apologize. Don't apologize.
No, I do, because I should have known better than open my mouth.
Don't ever apologize. Anybody who is, this is the extraordinary thing about UIQ. It's what sets you apart from virtually everyone I encounter. If someone points out something to you that is different from what you have been led to believe, you're immediately willing to discard that which is dishonest and accept that which is true. And that's the only way that you can be honest as a person who is interested in knowing truth. And it's an extraordinary skill. It's the one I use all the time, IQ. I have made a gazillion mistakes as I've tried to search for the truth. And when I find that I have said something that's wrong, I immediately admit it, and I go and correct it, and I'm thrilled that I found that I made a mistake, because then I can correct the record. But don't ever apologize when you're, so long as you're curious and you want to know the truth, and you will abandon lies when they're proven to be untrue, then you are a man that God wants to know.
So we come back to you now. The conclusions you made are based on knowledge.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. They're based on knowledge, and also, yes, it was simply I analyzed the situation, and this appeared to be the only rational conclusion. And it all turned out to be true.
Rational. Absolutely.
Yeah. IQ, let's talk.
You take care.
Yes.